This is Gary Wakefield, and you're listening to Queer Life Stories.
My name is Bridget Murray. I'm 28 years old, and I identify as lesbian, but also use the term queer. Yeah, so I grew up in Melbourne, in eastern suburbs, so yeah, in a pretty boring small sort of suburb, which was mostly filled with families and elderly people. Not a lot would happen there, but like, it was okay, I guess, yeah. I've been lucky in that my parents have always been together, they're still together, and I live with I have an older sister and a younger sister. So I grew up with them, and you know, we used to kind of argue a bit, you know, like all kids do. But yeah, I think now that we're older, we've matured a lot and we get along really well now. We're quite close with our extended families on both sides. I spent a lot of my childhood on my dad's side. They used to have a farm, so we used to go down to the farm pretty much every school holidays. It was around a 6 to 7 hour drive away, out in the middle of nowhere, no internet connection, no phone connection, no TV reception, like literally nothing, apart from, you know, the cows and dogs. And yeah, so that was really nice. I have a lot of fond memories doing that. And then on my mum's side, they kind of had most of their side kind of were living in Ballarat, so we would go there in holidays as well. And I also have some other extended family that who lived in Stawell, that kind of became like my grandparents, since my grandparents passed away when I was quite young, so they kind of took over that role and have a lot of fun memories of them too, like baking food for us and taking care of us. Yeah. Well, I guess the only gay representation I had in primary school was when I was in grade 6. The TV show The OC had Misha Barton date like a girl, and of course it was very short-lived, and all they did was kiss, and my mum wouldn't even let me watch the episode because when they advertised it as though they were going to have gay sex, and she was like, oh no, I can't see that. So she said I couldn't watch it, so I got my friend to video record it, like on their VHR or whatever, and I went over to their house and secretly watched it. So yeah, that was like the only gay representation I had, and of course she goes back to dating boys in the TV shows. So it was, you know, not really, yeah, proper gay representation. But yeah, so at least in primary school I didn't know anything about gay people, had no representation. And then in high school again, like our school was very small. We had 20 people in each year level, so it was absolutely tiny. It was an alternative school, so we didn't have uniforms. A lot of parents were quite alternative. My first friend in year 7 was like basically a hippie. Her mum made teepees for a living for weddings and stuff. So it wasn't until I was in year 9 that a new girl came to our school. And she was very openly gay, and suddenly I was like, oh my god, like, yeah, just, I guess gay people, like, I knew they existed by this point, but that they could actually be out, I guess. Yeah, because I'd kind of, in year 7, there was a article in Girlfriend magazine that I'd read about bi curiosity, and of course they couldn't talk about bisexuals or lesbians. They basically just said you might be curious to kiss a girl sometimes, and that was it. And I came out to a friend as bi curious, and that got around the school, and I got quite a bit of bullying for that. So I kind of shut down and kind of kept that part of my life secret for a long time, so it wasn't until year 9 when a girl came to school and was openly gay that I kind of went, oh, okay, maybe I can eventually kind of explore this side of myself. Like, maybe, you know, I don't have to be quiet or secret about it or pretend that that part of me doesn't exist. The bullying was initially in year 7 where so I said to a friend that I was bi-curious and told her not to tell anyone. And then, of course, you know, she passed it on because it's year 7. You know, rumours go around and gossip, you know, people love to pass it on. And so there was one girl who particularly was not a fan of that. So she started bullying me, basically saying that I was disgusting and for wanting to kiss a girl, and that basically, you know, I don't think she was all that religious, but she did say, like, I would pretty much go to hell for it and such. And then I ended up kissing my friend at a Halloween party as a truth or dare, and that kind of got around, and that didn't end too well. So after that, I kind of was like, okay, not gonna stay in the closet. So I basically stayed in the closet, I guess, until 18, but I was a year older than everyone, so it would have been year 12 for me. I did very, very, very briefly date one of my friends who was a girl, but that only lasted like 10 days. And even then, like, all we did was kiss once secretly in her bedroom, and that was it. Like, it was, you know, and I think she's definitely straight now, so I think it was more of a, she, you know, wasn't too sure.
She was curious.
She was a teenager. Yeah, just curious. Yeah, basically. So apart from that, and like when that very, very short relationship, which you probably couldn't even call a relationship, ended, I was absolutely heartbroken. Kind of went, nope, I'm never dating anyone again. That sort of thing, because she was my first relationship. And so I kind of just kept saying to friends, no, I like guys. To be honest, I don't think I like guys. I just thought they were cool, like, because they could play music and stuff. It didn't come out until I was 18 when I dated another friend. We kind of realised that we would have to come out, I guess. Because she, like, we'd been best friends for years, but then suddenly I was like, oh, I think I'm going to have to tell my parents just in case they walk in on me and her kissing or something. Like, probably better to give them some warning, I guess. Yeah. So the relationship kind of started with, we were up at Lawn. My family had rented like a nice sort of beach house sort of place up there for the summer holiday, which was quite large, and they had said that my sister and I could both bring some friends up for a bit as well to stay with us. So I had three friends come stay for a bit, and then two of them went back for New Year's, and so my best friend ended up staying. And because I was 18 at the time, I was able to buy alcohol. So my sister and I convinced my parents to let us go down to the beach to the New Year's party while they stayed back at the house. And they were like, oh yeah, we'll meet you a bit after midnight at the end of the street, and we'll walk you back up to make sure you're safe. So I bought a bunch of alcohol for me and my best friend, and then my sister convinced me to buy her some alcohol, but I, you know, bought her some cruises. Where me and my best friend were drinking like straight vodka. Probably not the best thing to do, but anyway. So we all got quite intoxicated. My sister and her friend were off and, you know, hung out with people. Me and my best friend hung out with people. It was like there was hundreds of like teenagers and early 20-year-olds there on the beach. And when it hit midnight, my friend and I were like, oh, let's just kiss because we're very drunk. And it was midnight, and you know, you kiss someone at midnight. So we kissed. And then a couple of weeks later, our high school kind of had a party, and we ended up kind of getting together. And then we were like, oh, okay, let's date. So I was like, okay, I'm gonna have to tell my parents. And I was pretty terrified. I guess I don't really know why, because they've always been pretty supportive. Like, I guess I had just had some negative story experiences with, like, I had a lot of mental health issues during my teenage years. I have, like, treatment-resistant depression, anxiety and stuff. Dealt with, like, a lot of self-harm during my teenage years, and I didn't really tell them. And then my sister read my diary, and so my parents were kind of like, you have to tell us what's going on. So I had kind of negative ideas around telling them. Like, I had that one negative story experience, so I kind of thought it would be similar with coming out to them, even though, yeah, I guess, like, well, it didn't end up being, they end up being great. So I told them, and they were both like, oh, okay, that's fine, you know, cool, whatever. And they said, yeah, your girlfriend can still come over, because my sisters had boyfriends and they were allowed to come over. So my parents were like, well, we gotta treat you the same. You're in a relationship, you know. So they were really good about it. It was actually my sisters who were a bit more difficult. They had gone to different schools to me, like private girls' school. And I guess that whole sort of private girls' school sort of vibe, where you kind of, they often would be like, oh yeah, well, a gay male best friend to take me shopping. But then lesbians kind of freaked them out a bit, because they'd be like, oh, lesbians, you know, like all girls kind of thing, like, you know, that sort of belief. And I don't think it was necessarily them, I think it was more the school culture they went to. So my older sister was a bit funny about it for a while. A bit like, oh, like, she actually spoke to my mom and said, I don't want Bridget's girlfriend staying the night or kind of coming over because I feel uncomfortable. And mum basically told her to get over it. and was like, well, you've had boyfriends over, so, you know, like, you're just gonna have to learn to live with it. And I think that was kind of a good, wake up moment for her to kind of go, oh, okay, fair enough. And like, they're amazing now, but yeah, I think they just kind of had their moment. And at first I was a little bit hurt when mum kind of told me that, and then I kind of went, oh, you know what, it's probably, it was a bit hard for them because they did go to a different school to me, and like, they, you know, like, yeah, they kind of, yeah, grew up with a slightly different set of beliefs initially, and they probably did need some time to kind of get used to it, I guess, yeah. Like, I'd always been an anxious child. I think that was more due to I was premature as a baby and spent quite a lot of time in hospital initially. I was like 3.5 months premature. So I think sort of like that kind of inbuilt sort of like an anxious response in me, because I can remember at 5 years old, my mum and I going to like a swimming lesson and me saying to me, saying to mum that I had butterflies in my tummy, and mum being like, what do you mean? Like, I didn't know how to describe anxiety because I didn't know what anxiety was. I just knew of like the saying that there's butterflies in your tummy. And then after that, because mum was like, oh, kind of like, you know, there's no need for that. Like, you're just going to swimming. You go swimming every week, kind of thing. So after that, I was kind of like, oh, okay, clearly this isn't something you talk about. So that kind of, I didn't really discuss it. And then, yeah, when I was in grade 6, I started self-harming, and my parents found out, and that didn't end well because it was like 2005. No one really knew anything about self-harm, and the school didn't handle it appropriately at all. They basically sent me to the school counsellor, who read me a book about how everyone gets sad sometimes and you won't do this silly thing again, and off you go. So I went into year 7 being like, saying to my parents, yep, I won't do it again, I'm fine, because I didn't know how to explain to them that I felt sad. Like, I had suicidal thoughts from grade 6. Like, I remember sitting in the schoolyard and thinking about death. So I didn't know how to explain it to them. I didn't want to worry them because they really were extremely worried and kind of freaked out about the self-harm thing. So I was like, oh yeah, just better if I just shut them out. And yeah, so yeah, throughout yeah, year seven onwards, like I quickly went back into self-harming to cope with my emotions. And I don't think it was completely about my sexuality. I think it was just, I had all these emotions and I didn't know how to deal with them. Because Headspace didn't exist when I was a teenager, and so there was nothing there, and I didn't like the school counselor at my high school because he had, we'd spoken to him about some close friends and he had straight away gone and talked to their parents, so he didn't seem like a safe person to disclose to. Yeah, so most of my high school life, I just kind of shut my parents out. Only some close friends kind of knew what was going on in terms of my mental health. It wasn't a good time.
Have you talked to your parents about that period and what you went through since?
A bit. They, like, now after turning 18, I kind of, so my parents, like, they found out and it didn't go down so well. They basically said, you go see this counsellor and you're going to deal with it. And I'd also developed an eating disorder by that point. And I guess I didn't want to give up my eating disorder. So I lied and said, yeah, I have like some mental health issues, but I don't have an eating disorder, because I was like, I can't give up all my coping strategies. Like, so, which, you know, I shouldn't have done, but I just wasn't ready. So I started seeing this counsellor. I didn't like them because they were also seeing my sister at the time, briefly. So I was like, oh, don't trust them. So I decided I would organise for myself to see a psychiatrist to go on medication. So I told my parents, I said, look, you can either support me by coming to the appointment or you can not support me. And so they didn't agree with it, but my mum was like, okay, well, this is only for A that Bridget's going to let us in. So she came to the appointment, and the psychiatrist, I didn't realise now that they weren't very good at their job. I'd never had a psychiatrist before, so I didn't realise that's not normal to put someone on medication in the first appointment. They literally did like a 10-minute history and then just chucked me on some meds and said, off you go, pretty much. And so throughout year 12, I was, because I turned 18 when I was in year 11, and saw the psychiatrist in, I think, October or November of year 11. So then in year 12, basically the psychiatrist was changing my meds constantly. Every 2 to 3 weeks, I was getting put on new meds and stuff. So I was dealing with side effects, also still dealing with my anger disorder and refusing to tell anyone about it. So dealing with that, and then, yeah, so year 12 wasn't a good time because I just kind of, was still kind of shutting my parents out quite a bit, and didn't end up opening up to them until I was, I think, 21. I kind of, when everything kind of came to a head, and I suddenly went, I am so suicidal that I'm going to do something. So I took myself, I called the CAT team and they told me to go to a local catchment area hospital. So my friend took me, and that didn't go so well. The registrar there basically said, we have no beds, go home. So I had to go home and basically tell my parents everything and be like, look, I'm sorry to do this to you, but I'm suicidal. I was planning to take my life. I went to the hospital. They had no beds, so they've sent me home. I can't get onto my psychiatrist to tell her. I've been calling her like for the past 2 weeks every day and she's not getting back to me. I have an eating disorder, sorry, you know, to lie. I've had it since I was 13, like, and I can't cope with it anymore. And basically just gave them the whole story and dumped it on them, which really probably wasn't the best way to do it, but anyway, and they were really good. They had a cry and they went, okay, we don't really know what to do either, but we're gonna support you through this. And then I guess from there I had to learn to open up and kind of tell them bits of what had kind of happened in high school and stuff over time. Now, like, we talk, like, now I have a different psychiatrist, it's amazing, and we talk, and, like, when things are a bit tough, like, I don't always tell them fully what's going on initially, because I don't want to worry them, and sometimes I'm like, no, I'll just deal with it with my psych first, and then if it gets worse, then I'll tell my parents, like, because everything's always up and down kind of thing. So, so they kind of know a bit. I guess I didn't tell them, like, the full extent that, like, you know, how bad the sort of the self-harming and stuff got, but, like, they're aware that basically high school wasn't a great time for me. And I guess they're a bit sad about that, that I didn't feel like I could tell them, because they would have supported me through it, but I guess I just had to learn to trust them, and I guess I just had to go through that and to kind of build that relationship that's really good now. I was studying photography, and actually I did deal with some homophobia there as well. It was quite a small photography college, I had a couple of people in my class on Facebook, and one of the girls had made a post talking about, like, something negative and then saying it was gay, like, using "that's so gay" as it being bad or whatever. And I commented on a Facebook post saying, you know, that's not appropriate, like, that's a bit homophobic. And then her best friend basically started bullying me for it and being like, oh, you know, you're too sensitive, you know, you're just, it's not homophobic, like, clearly you're just gay and stuff. And I was like, well, I am gay, but, like, that's beside the point.
It's still homophobic.
Yeah, still homophobic, exactly. So I basically didn't really have many friends, because she managed to turn most of the class against me by basically saying that I was bullying her friend when I wasn't, like, and everyone just kind of trusted her for it. So I didn't really have many friends there, so I was feeling quite alone. I had tried to kind of get a little bit of help for my eating disorder by myself, because my psychiatrist was quite shitty and basically said that I wasn't sick enough. Because I asked for help and said, could I do an inpatient eating disorder program, because she was connected with a private hospital that had an eating disorder program, and she said, you're not sick enough for the program. Which I know now is quite ridiculous, because it's private, they actually don't take high-risk clients, because they can't legally do that, because they're private. So they can't take people who are medically unstable and stuff like that. So they could have taken me. I think she just didn't want to do the paperwork, essentially. I tried to basically get some help myself, and it wasn't going so well. I was finding it not all that helpful. So everything was just kind of compounding, like the bullying, you know, my aim to sort of, like, not getting proper help, feeling invalidated for my psych. I'd also, at the end of year 12, lost a lot of my friends. There was kind of something kind of happened where there was some miscommunication between me and a girl, and she basically, said that I kind of been bullying when I honestly don't think I had. It was a bit of, basically I'd made a post on, I had a Tumblr blog, and I'd made a post about how I was a bit hurt about another friend of hers who had organised, like, an 18th celebration, hadn't invited me. She invited a lot of people, hadn't invited me. And because our year level was quite small, it felt kind of quite hurtful, because it seemed like everyone else was invited. And so I made a post basically saying that I was worried that they didn't like me, and that was all I said, was I was worried they didn't like me and that maybe I'd done something wrong. And then her friend basically said that I was bullying by posting that on my Tumblr blog where people could see. And I was like, well, I never said that, you know, they were doing the wrong thing. I just said that I was worried I had done something. And so she decided to uninvite me to schoolies, which pretty much everyone in the year level was going to. And so after that, I kind of went, oh my God, I have no friends, because no one stood up for me or anything. They just kind of went, okay, we're all going to go schoolies and you're just not going. So after that, I kind of basically lost pretty much all my friends in high school. My girlfriend had broken up with me by that point. And so all her sort of friendship group as well, because she was in the year level below me, had kind of cut me off as well. So I finished year 12 and went, shit, I have no friends. So the only friends I had were online friends, essentially. So it was very, not a good time. I keep saying that, but it was just, throughout that whole period, it was just not a good time. Yeah.
Well, coming out, I guess, about your eating disorder and your mental health issues with your parents when you were 21, what happened next?
So from there, my mum came to an appointment with my psych and basically said, what can we do to support Bridget through this? Because she wants to get better, she's suicidal, you know, when clearly she doesn't have enough support, we need to do something. And my psych was actually quite angry that I'd gone to the public hospital and basically said, don't do that again. And I was like, what do you mean? Like, I was suicidal, I tried to reach out for help. Surely you would want me to do that rather than killing myself. And she basically said, you should have come to me. And I was like, I did try to do that. Called you every day for 2 weeks to make an earlier appointment and you didn't call me back. And she basically just said, just don't do that again. So she did organise for a dietitian, but that was basically the extent of what she did. And so things, you know, obviously just having one dietitian appointment wasn't all that helpful. So I started asking if I could do, they also had a day eating disorder day program at the hospital. So my mum and I kept asking her to write up a referral, and so did my dietitian. And she started, she kept saying, no, you don't need it. And then it got to the point that she started ignoring my dietitian's calls. So my dietitian was calling her regularly. So she pretty much blocked my dietitian's number. So my mum basically had to go in and be like, I think she was quite upset, basically be like, you need to write the referral. And I think my psych basically got annoyed of us constantly asking her. So she wrote the referral, but as she wrote it, she said to me, I still don't think you need this, as she wrote the referral. So she sent her off, I got in, and it was amazing. I actually managed to recover thanks to it, from my eating disorder. So it was really helpful. I did the day program, I think it was 5 days a week. And some half days I would go to my photography course, so I was still studying it, and my studies were really good. They were like, that's fine, we understand mental health is top priority, you're a pretty good student, you do your work from home, so you know, as long as you get your assignments in, it's fine, kind of thing. The teachers were great as well, they just sent me like their PowerPoints and stuff, so I wasn't missing out on important stuff. And so I managed to complete my photography course and complete the eating disorder day program. And I guess my reward was that mum said, if you wait with store, we'll go to New York, which I'd kind of always wanted to go to. We'll go to New York together. So we did that and it was amazing. It was so rewarding to be able to be like, yes, I recovered and got to do this amazing thing and actually enjoy the holiday because I was able to eat food and not worry about it. It was good. And then through that, I actually kind of started to realise how shitty my psych was, because everyone else in the day program was talking about all these amazing things their psych did to support them. And I was like, oh, my psych isn't doing any of that. And I would tell them what my psych was doing. They'd be like, oh my God, that's not okay. That's like medically neglectful. That's, you know, that's, they shouldn't be doing that. And I started going, oh, okay, maybe I need to get a new psych. So I put up with her for like another year and kind of went, nah, stop this. I'll get a new one. So yeah, got a person who, some people had recommended in the eating disorder day program. They'd said, oh, this psych is amazing, go see her. And luckily she took me on and, you know, now I have really good support and it's really helped, yeah. Funnily enough, a lot of the online friendships became like real life friendships. It's like two friends, especially like my best friends now, and we support each other through everything. They've gone through sort of similar mental health sort of things, and they're now in good places. So it was kind of nice to for us to both kind of go through our journeys, support each other, and now get to good places. And some of my high school friends, we kind of reconnected and kind of, which was nice. So I've got like a really good support network now. And now I'm working actually in mental health, as a peer support worker. So yes, I use my lived experience to kind of help others, which has been, yeah, really nice. I think I was always going to end up in mental health at some point. It just took me some time to kind of get there. Like, I had to kind of reach recovery and get to a stable point because I spent a lot of years still dealing with my depression, even after recovering from my eating disorder, and I had to do a lot to kind of get to a point. Like, I'm still not fully recovered in that I still have depression, but I'm no longer suicidal. I no longer use negative coping strategies. I can emotionally regulate my emotions. Like, I know how cope with distress and stuff in healthy ways. So I was like, you know what, I can use this to help others. I did have one funny experience though with a GP who I had come out to her, and I think she kind of forgot about it because then last year she wanted to do some tests because I was dealing with a lot of, I had a chronic health condition that kind of started up and it was causing a lot of nausea. So she was like, oh, let's do a pregnancy test just in case. And I didn't want to kind of like be like, I'm gay, I've never slept with a guy in my life, like, unless I'm the Virgin Mary, you know, I can't be pregnant. But I just kind of left it, just came home and like laughed to my parents about it. And was like, oh, I'm having to do like a blood test to check that I'm pregnant. And my parents were like, what? So we laughed, and now I was like, I'm not even going to bother like correcting her because I'm sure she'll be very embarrassed when she realises. So I was just like, I'll just leave it, like, you know, it's fine, I'll just do the blood test, it doesn't matter. The job I've got, it's actually in a Catholic hospital, and so when I applied for it, I wrote like a standard cover letter, and then when I went to the job interview, I was trying to weigh up, do I come out in the job interview, because I knew that one thing I really wanted to do was help LGBT people. Like, I know that that's a very big sort of value and passion of mine, so I was like, do I say this? Like, do I say it in the job interview? Am I going to get discriminated against? Like, and then I basically said to myself, well, if I come out and I don't get the job, and it is because I generally, you know, it is generally because they're homophobic, then I want more work for that organisation. Then I tried to go down that sort of idea of, you know, it's not me if it's the organisation that, you know, you don't want to work for them, you don't want to deal with that. So I basically came out in my interview, and I think it ended up actually being one of the reasons I got the job, because the Catholic hospital is currently trying to bring in LGBT stuff, so they've actually got me onto their LGBT governance committee, and they've hired someone who's going to be like the LGBT project officer to try and change everything in the hospital to make it LGBT friendly. So I think I came at the right time. I think if it was 2 years ago, I probably could have potentially maybe been discriminated against. But I guess because I, said it at the right time when they were like, no, we're trying to, you know, show that we're not homophobic or transphobic or any of that. They actually went, actually, we want her because she's going to help with that. And it's been good with my job role because it's meant that I end up coming out actually to the entire clinic via email. I sent around an LGBT inclusive language guide and then said at the start of the email, I identify as lesbian, and so if you have any questions around language, just, you know, have a chat to me kind of thing. And I was like, oh, this is a bit risky. Sent the email, was kind of like, what have I done? And then ended up getting a bunch of nice emails from all my colleagues, including the admin team, being like, you're so brave, thank you so much for coming out to us. We really appreciate it, that it's really amazing of you. And so because of that, a lot of the case managers have ended up coming up to me and going, oh, I've got a client who's actually struggling with some LGBT stuff, would you be able to take them on? And I've been like, yeah, sure, awesome, yay, that's exactly what I want. So it's been, really good. For a bit, I kind of was like, don't really care too much. Like, I'd occasionally go to, like, we have, like, a club called Thursday in Melbourne that's, it's only on Thursday nights, basically, but it's, like, a queer-friendly club. Sadly, in Melbourne, we have no lesbian bars, which I think is, like, such a downside. It's either gay men club or just, like, clubs that are just, more, like, just queer-friendly. And so I used to occasionally go to that, and for a couple of years I was kind of like, don't really care about, like, being connected with the LGBT community, don't really care about whether people know about me being LGBT, doesn't really matter. And then after kind of like the same-sex marriage vote, it kind of became a bit more, no, I think this is more important and stuff. Like, I started to be a bit more vocal, and then ironically this year I was like, this is going to be the year that I'm going to get connected again to the LGBT community and go to all the events. And then of course COVID happened, and I was like, oh, okay, that's not going to happen. Managed to go midsummer, and then that was it. Everything was like, bam, closed. And I was like, oh, what a shame. Because I was like, no, I'm going to get more, you know, more connected and be more out and open. And because I don't have a lot of LGBT friends. I've only got two, mostly, that are really close friends. So, oh wait, no, three friends. But they're not friends together, so I don't get to go to, like, group things. Like, I don't really have, like, a little LGBT group. And I kind of, I see that happen a lot in the community. I'm always like, I'm a little bit jealous of that. Like, it would be nice to have a little group and feel, like, connected and stuff. Yeah.
My next question was going to be about the marriage equality and how you survived through that and how that impacted you.
I actually, I was in hospital at the time, having my first admission for electroconvulsive therapy. So I wasn't in a good headspace. I was quite suicidal and not doing mentally well. And even though all my friends list are LGBT friendly, none of them are homophobic whatsoever, they were still sharing articles about homophobic stuff. I guess because they wanted to be like, look what's happening, look what's coming out. But then I was finding it personally really emotionally difficult. It was starting to make me go, oh my God, the world hates me. Like, so I started into like a really dark place and started to go, oh my God, like, maybe it's not okay for me to be gay. So I actually had to disable my Facebook until the marriage equality debate was over. So I think it was about 3 or 4 weeks. They got rid of my Facebook. I kept my Instagram because most of the accounts I was following was like not LGBT related at the time, so I didn't need to worry about that stuff sort of coming up on my feed. But with Facebook, I just had to deactivate and basically be like, I'm keeping Messenger so you can still message me, but I just couldn't have it on my feed because it was just too much. It was just really hard to basically be like, my rights and who I am as a person is up for debate. Like, why it should even be up for debate? Like, and why do straight people in heteronormative society get to have a say in that? Like, that's so messed up. Like, it's not fair at all. So it was just, I absolutely, I hated it. It was, like, I'm glad that it passed. I'm so glad, you know, it's amazing to be able to have the option to get married if I ever find someone to date. It shouldn't have been done like that. It should have never happened.
Do you have a message for the people listening that are struggling?
Find your find your people who support you, whether that be friends or family, because they are out there, even online. Like, I made a lot of friends online, because there are people out there, and you know, you aren't alone. And one day, like, you know, you are going to be supported, and one day it's going to be okay. You know, you may be shit now, but it will get better. Yeah, thank you.
Thanks, Bridget.
Thanks so much, Gary.
If you are struggling with your mental health, please contact Lifeline on 13 1114 or Beyond Blue on 1300 224 636. Both services are available 24/7. If you would like to share your story, talk about your experiences, or would just like to get in touch, you can email me at queerlifestories@outlook.com or find us on Facebook or Instagram. Just search for Queer Life Stories. This podcast is a no-budget, one-man operation to produce, but you can support this podcast by following, donating, or subscribing to it at Patreon. That's patreon.com/queerlifestories. If you're listening in Northwest Tasmania and would like to be part of an LGBT plus community social and support group, search Facebook for Northwest Pride. In Tasmania, if you want support for sexuality, gender, or intersex status, you can contact Working It Out on 03 6231 1200. Q Life provide anonymous and free LGBTI peer support and referrals for people across Australia wanting to talk about sexuality, gender identity, relationships, and more. They're available 3 p.m. to midnight every day on 1800 184 527 or web chat with them at qlife.com.au. You can hear future episodes of Queer Life Stories at Stitcher, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts from. Please follow, rate, and review. It does really help. We will be back soon. Take care of yourself and each other.